I'm a Lutheran pastor and have spent a fair amount of time in Latin America and continue to work in Hispanic ministry and try to maintain my connections, my global connections with friends and with the church in Latin America. One of the things I've enjoyed about Holden Village has been the Bible studies. And my experience in the past has been there's been a Bible study leader who's prepared this wonderful series of Bible studies that I have enjoyed and look forward to. And when I came here, I was asked to do a Bible study. And I thought, this doesn't fit in with what I expected of a Bible study here at Holden. But as I was thinking about it, I thought, well, this is Rainbow Week. And maybe rainbow also means a different style as well as different color, different language and all that goes with that. And so once I started thinking along those lines, I realized what I wanted to share with you today. And what I'd like to do is to introduce you to a style of Bible study that I was introduced to in Latin America and that I have found useful and have used in various other situations. A lot of people, I tried to explain what's happening in Latin America to a lot of people. We read the paper and hear what's going on in the news, and it sounds like a lot of turmoil. And there are different interpretations as to why there's so much turmoil in Latin America. And people sometimes ask me, well, isn't it because the communists are creating this turmoil? And it's not really that reason. It's not that way. And it's a much more complicated situation. And but that seems to be what we are told through our own media a lot. And to try to explain to people that, no, actually the turmoil has a lot to do with the Bible, sort of, you know, generates a lot of questions. But if you ask people in Latin America, you know, why are you being persecuted at this time, a number of people will say to you, well, it's because we read our Bibles and we live according to them, and that's why. In Guatemala and El Salvador right now, there's a lot of persecution of people. Many people have been disappeared, who have been killed. And among the list of high-risk people who are likely to suffer a disappearance or a murder, rank health workers who work a lot with the peasants, with the campesinos, and poor people, and also catechists. I'm not sure which one has the higher, the lower life expectancy, whether it's the church catechists or the health workers, but people who work among the poor and who enable them to live out their lives more healthily and more with more dignity are among the highest risk in situations where the government is very oppressive. And so one of the things that helped me to understand a little bit more what that struggle was about and what that meant for them was to learn to read the Bible in the way that they read the Bible. And so I'd like to share a style of Bible study, a method of Bible study that I first experienced in Nicaragua 2 years ago. I was in a little town in Esteli, north of Managua, with a Roman Catholic priest who was working with Salvadoran refugees in Nicaragua. And he said that his particular community this time was studying the book of Mark, and they were using this method. It had been really fruitful, and he led us through a Bible study. And so I had done that a couple of other times since then. And also, I was in Nicaragua again this last April and was able to participate the week before Holy Week. Friday, they call Friday of Sorrows. And there was a group of mothers of the disappeared and martyrs, women who had lost children through the war there, who were having a march for peace from a northern town in Nicaragua up to the border, the Honduran border. And we gathered one evening in the town of Ocotal, and people came from all over Nicaragua, and they were arriving late at night. And the church there, they'd fed us, they prepared some tortillas and some beans. And then we all went out to a big, huge field. And what they did was they led us all in Bible study. And they divided into small groups and were reflecting on this particular text that we were given in light of their reality there. And it was just fascinating to be a part of that and to hear the different interpretations. So I thought that this particular method of Bible study would be very appropriate today, because one of the real gifts of Holden Village is all of you who are here, who come from a great diverse set of experiences and realities, and that together we'll put our minds together and perhaps discover something new about some texts that we've already read many times in the past. But that is what I would like to do right now. And I'd like to just share the method with you at first. We did this earlier with the staff. It was a little smaller group. And we will not be doing this as profoundly as you might be able to do in your own situation, because we have just 1 hour. But what I'd like us to do is probably have a sort of a feel for what this method is like within different passages. So we'll be taking dividing into three groups and studying three passages. And then we'll share all our conclusions together afterwards to some extent. And then I'd like just a few minutes afterwards to reflect with you on your own experience of the study itself. So that's sort of our format now for this hour. The method that we're going to use involves basically three questions. We're going to be taking these three passages, and they're very much focused on action. The study is focused on action. It'll be a little bit difficult for us perhaps to focus as we look at these texts, because we're very word-oriented and idea-oriented and thought-oriented. But what we're going to look at, the first question we're going to ask as we read these passages is, what did Jesus do in this passage? We want to know nothing more than what Jesus actually did, not what we think he thought or felt or said even, but just what did he do? What were the actions involved by Jesus in this passage? The second question is, who resisted or opposed him in his actions? Where did resistance or opposition come to his actions? And the third question is, who benefited from his actions? Sounds very simple. It may be difficult also, because we're so used to focusing on what Jesus said, and that I should do a disclaimer here. This does not mean this is the only form to study the Bible, that each of these methods brings us into the gospel in a new way, and this is a way that can be fruitful for us as well. So we're not throwing out Jesus' words, but we're focusing on his actions today. And then the second set of questions is basically the same ones, but it's focused on us today. What do we or would we do like Jesus? If we're following Jesus' actions, what do we in our context today do? And secondly, who resists and opposes us in that? And thirdly, who benefits from that action that we do? I think the hardest thing is just focusing on the action part. I would ask each of you in your group, if you might want to choose somebody in your group who will just lead you off, because we'll have little time. We'll have 15 minutes to look at this, and then somebody to report back to us what you've decided. Any questions about the style of what we're doing? Sort of clear? Okay. I have three passages that we're going to look at. We're going to do it in three different groups. I think all of you can be a group up there. You're not overwhelmingly large. And then I'll also divide us right down here and give each of you a different text as well to look at. And in terms of discussing, we might want to do this in somewhat smaller units, but that's how we'll divide up the text. So are we ready for this? I'm sure we're ready for this. the other frustrating thing besides just focusing on one thing often is that we don't have the time to do this at greater length, but if this does work, I would encourage you to try it again, perhaps with a smaller, if you have a Bible study group or in your church or someplace or among friends, you might want to try this for a longer period of time and more happens. Okay, let me see. This group over here, you are going to be reading Mark chapter 6, verses 30 to 44. And this group over here will be reading John chapter 8, verses 1 to 11. The group in the upper room up there was going to be reading Mark chapter 11, verses 12 to 19. So I think the group up there can just all gather together. I think these two groups are going to be probably too large to do just one huge group. But if you could divide in two, perhaps, over here. You can read your passage, perhaps, to yourselves and get the focus for it. and then start answering some of these questions together as a group. Why don't we start over here with the group who was reading out of Mark 6, and you know, somebody, perhaps one person could also tell us what the story is since the rest haven't read it, just sort of a thumbnail sketch, and then we'll answer some of these questions.
Okay, the Mark 6, text 30 to 44 was about the feeding of the 5,000 when Jesus had the townspeople just wanted to be with him, so they kept following him even when the disciples and him were ready to depart. And Jesus felt the need that they be fed when his disciples felt the need that they just get home and get their food. And it was there that he took the few food that there was and transformed it into the much food that was able to feed that many people.
Okay.
And then we dealt with the questions, and we felt that the main action that Jesus did was transforming of that food into food for 5,000. And so, and also another action that was pointed out was,
we might want to qualify that. I notice it says there are 5,000 men. So, not to speak of the women and the children, which are probably there, but we'll just, it was more. Go ahead, yeah. You're subversive already. Organize the crowd, okay.
That was an action.
It was an action, yeah.
Okay.
I always learn something new in these sessions.
And the resistance that came up was his disciples. they were ready to get home and go to sleep themselves, and they're also worried about the cost in feeding that crowd. And who benefited from his action? Of course, all those that were present there. Yeah, and the disciples. Not only in their getting fed, but seeing what Jesus was able to do. And going on to the next group of questions, we talked about several different areas and experiences in our own group that we've had, and things that we might attempt or actions we might attempt to do like Jesus. One person brought up forming food banks in our churches, and we feel that there typically is some opposition from some members, and it was also brought up that it's not necessarily opposition, but in a sense someone who doesn't volunteer to help or isn't willing to promote the program or
a form of resistance. Yeah. Not participating. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's who we feel is the resisting.
Okay. How do we define that resist? Who resists?
Okay.
Other
members of the church.
Okay. Other disciples.
Yeah. And non-participants. Okay. And the benefactors would be the hungry. Another thing was forming handicap programs. I guess that was school related, right? Okay. And the opposition that was run up. Whoops, you want to write that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. And the opposition that was incurred by that would be people that are in maybe managing the funding for programs such as that. And benefiters with children that are handicapped and their parents and volunteers.
Okay.
And we also had similar things going on in churches for trying to form things like that. Another thing was a convalescent hospital and some other offsets of that.
Okay, let me ask you something here. You were talking about food up here, organizing to do food, and you made a leap over here to handicapped, and you're talking now about convalescent. What was the connection for your group in that?
I guess just meeting community needs.
Okay.
I mean, the need that Jesus saw was, at that point, was for them to be fed. And although there are needs of being fed, I think there's probably many more needs that we are...
Okay, so you took that as other physical needs, yeah, too, then, besides just food.
Yeah. Okay. Then we talked about the needs of our youth and the programs that they're... opportunities that they're given at churches.
Okay.
And the opposition comes from maybe long-time members or people that aren't willing to participate.
Okay.
That's kind of
right. Yeah, it's part of that.
Yeah. And the people that benefit are the youth and workers. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
Okay, good. There's another group that was doing the same one, so why don't we see if there's something you want to add to this.
Okay,
you may have some of the same things.
There are a couple of things. In the action part, what did Jesus do? One thing we felt that was important was the fact that he gave thanks and blessed the food, because this, to him, was the first thing he did.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And... resisted with the disciples, mm-hmm, and benefited the people, all of the people present, including the disciples. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, okay, in what do we do or would do like Jesus? We use the general term of sharing of our means to feed hungry. The general sharing of, you know, monies or whatever, mm-hmm, means to feed hungry people. And then who resists? We felt that we all do at times. We might feel selfish. And then also another group that often exists are those who feel people who are in need should be out working instead of, you know, asking for handouts. That type of an attitude that is often.
Okay. See how we're going to write that.
People resist.
Yeah, those who don't acknowledge the need, or I don't know what that would be.
Indifference.
Yeah, it's a form of indifference. It's more than that, though. It's a whole ideology of deserving and non-deserving need. I mean, it's a categorizing of need. So you deserve to be needy and you don't. But
if you worked, you wouldn't be hungry, so you actually do deserve to.
I know, it's a judgmental attitude. Judgmentalness, whatever.
And okay. That gets to the very last question, who benefits? We also feel that those who are serving are benefiting as well as those who are serving.
Okay. Okay, I think what we're going to do is just go quickly through all the groups right now, and then we'll come back and look at these a little, because probably those of you who didn't study this but are listening have in your own mind other things that you've been already are picking up on that go up here. Let's go quickly now to John 8. I know there were three groups over here that were doing that. Somebody quickly tell us what, one of the spokespeople, quickly tell us what the story in John 8 is about.
Okay, Jesus went up to the Mount of Olives, and then early in the morning he came again to the temple, and he sat down and taught the people. And then the scribes and the Pharisees wanted to trip him up. So they brought a woman to him who had committed adultery, and they said to him, now, in the commandments it says we are to stone this woman, so what do you say? And he didn't say anything. He wrote on the ground. And then he wrote on the ground again, and we're not exactly sure what it was that he wrote on the ground. And then they continued to ask him, so he stood up and said to them, let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her. And then when they had heard this, they went away one by one. And they left Jesus and the woman alone. And he said to her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?
And she said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and do not sin again."
Okay, remember this story? Okay, what? Let's just quickly go through the actions. What are the actions Jesus did? Give me some words here.
He went to the Mount of Olives.
Okay.
He came to the temple again. He sat and taught. He wrote. He stood up.
Sad, he stood, yeah. Action.
It's all action.
Yeah.
And he forgave. Okay. For want of a better word, for his telling the woman that she was to sin no more.
How about who resisted, opposed him?
What? Could I add one thing in there?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
She had mentioned between sitting down and teaching and bending down and writing on the ground, you had mentioned he first kept silence. I think that might be significant. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. Yes. That is.
Okay.
I think also in the first passage there, when he went to the Mount of Olives, we can read into that and pray.
Okay. Who resisted, opposed him?
The scribes and the Pharisees.
Okay. Those who benefited?
Primarily the woman, but we also feel that the people benefited in that they did not stone the woman.
They were prevented from doing this.
They were prevented from committing an act of violence against her. We don't know whether the scribes or the Pharisees benefited. They benefited in that they got some ammunition to use against Jesus.
So Oh, you're talking about, the benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was, a different kind of benefit.
It's a different kind of benefit, but it is a benefit.
Okay. Well, what do you have to offer? What would we do? I know these were long conversations. I heard some of these conversations. What if we can just sort of outline those? What sort of actions did you?
We talked about, we tried to think who would be the woman in society.
Mm-hmm.
We came up with an AIDS victim.
Mm. And the action, what we would do in relationship to an AIDS victim?
We kind of had a little bit of a problem as deciding whether it would be an innocent AIDS victim, such as a child who wanted to attend school, and people would say, no way do we want a child who is a victim of AIDS with our children, mm-hmm. contaminating our children. Mm-hmm. Or would we say it would be an AIDS victim who was possibly a homosexual? And we didn't get to expand on that one. But that would probably be more like...
So you distinguished in categories AIDS victims. They're not just victims, they're... Uh-huh, that's interesting, yes. And a parallel with the woman, was it a woman who was taken advantage of by a man against her will and seen to be an adulteress, or was she somebody who willingly, we know that didn't happen in this story, so
right.
We don't. Okay, so you're saying our action would be to, did you come up with an action, what would we do?
Well, we came up with an action as to what we would do for an AIDS victim who was an innocent child, that we would go to a school board meeting and stand up for that child being able to attend school.
Okay. I'm going to put that down. I'm putting some words in your mouth here to advocate for an AIDS victim.
Mm-hmm.
For
be an advocate.
For that. Okay. And who would resist and oppose them?
Parents of the children.
Okay, we'll put it in. Okay. And who would benefit?
The
child.
The child. And also the children and the parents could certainly benefit from it.
Okay. Okay, that's okay. You viewed the woman as an outcast without specifying what kind of outcast she was and looking for something comparable. How about the other groups? What sort of things would you have to add, the two other groups? Are there other actions, or especially this part down here, that you would like to add to them? What is your...
Well, yes. At the moment, we are on the mountain. Susie went to the mountain.
Uh-huh. We are indeed.
I think we, our group, if I can speak for our group, saw anybody that was different. The examples that came up were divorce, homosexuality, and in my mind, I thought about anybody that was different sexually, different racially, different in any way, young, old. I noticed in the story that it was the oldest that left first. And then in terms of who resisted, we didn't talk about this, but it got real quiet in our group. Therefore, I think, and I was quiet as well, therefore I can speak for myself, I think I resisted in terms of the second set. Mm-hmm. It would be myself that would resist, make a contact or connecting up with people that were really different, or just different than me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe making contact with people that were older, or different sexual preferences, or a different color. Or race, I guess, is appropriate language. And in terms of who would benefit, given that, I'm not sure.
Okay. The other group, yeah.
Yeah, we had, can I go ahead and speak when I wrote down here?
Sure.
One of the things that we noted that benefited in the story with the scribes and Pharisees because they were turned away from doing what they were going to do. Jesus kind of saved them from committing an act of violence.
Mm-hmm.
That was a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about the fifth question or the fourth question, what do we do today? We saw two things. We found that we might act like the scribes and Pharisees. Be bringing somebody, you know, for condemnation to somebody else. Or if we were standing in Jesus' shoes, that we cannot condemn anybody. As Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount. Another suggestion was that we might appoint a committee.
Prepare a study whether or not we should accept this person, right? I read those.
That was said kind of seriously.
Yeah, no, it's...
Lutheran church often does that.
Right, no, I'm serious. No, I've read them. It's true for understanding of people. And I can see some of these issues coming up, like is a person a victim or are they somebody who is getting what they deserved? Did this woman deserve this? All those kinds of things fill our consciousness and we say, well, we can't accept somebody who deserves what they're supposed to get. And so we find out what's about.
Might even say we've got to go into dialogue.
Right, or we have rules for that so we don't have to dialogue.
One of the things that occurred to me too, what Jesus did was that he defended the woman.
That's a good one, yeah. If you don't take words just out of the text, the action that he did is he defended her, he protected her.
And he also resisted or stood up to the Pharisees.
And I would add to that too, he challenged them. That's another action to challenge them. Good. Okay, we've got to move on quickly here. Mark 11 upstairs.
We had Mark 11.
I think I told you 12, probably 15, huh?
Yeah.
You found 15
anyway,
to 19.
The first part of it was where he goes up to a fig tree and it's not good because it's not in season and he cursed the tree.
Yeah. Okay. Jesus cursed it. I think I'll put that one
so
down.
So we say he cursed the tree, or he talked to the tree, and then he went into the city and came up to the temple where we were buying and selling, and he overturned the tables, and so we said he trashed the temple, basically.
He went to the temple and he trashed it, okay?
Overturned tables. And then he taught.
Okay.
So, and then he drove people out, both the buyers and the sellers. And he taught the crowd, and we weren't sure who was the crowd. Who was left?
Right after they all.
And then who resisted or opposed him or his actions? The buyers and the sellers at the temple. It sounds like he drove them out, and then he blocked them so they couldn't continue to come through. So it sounds like there were people still trying to come through to buy and sell. And scribes and the chief priests also opposed him because they heard it and sought a way to destroy him. They feared him. Mm-hmm. So scribes and chief priests.
Okay.
Who benefited from his actions? The crowd, the multitudes who were taught. And we said those who were coming to worship that had to buy, so they were saving for those who didn't have the money to buy and they didn't need to that day.
Okay.
That's all for the first section.
What about us?
What would we do like Jesus? We talk mainly about stewardship, and a lot of people were pretty adamant about our church being really hung up on always wanting money and making you feel kind of guilty if you don't give. So
what
we do, I just wrote clean up the stewardship system. And who would resist or oppose? Pastors, church leaders, the stewardship committees, and the whole church.
Anybody else?
I suppose guests that aren't regular church attenders, who don't need to feel guilty if they can't put them in. Those would be the only ones left.
Oh, what was that you just said? That was for...
Well, those who benefit are mm-hmm. people, and there's less guilt when you don't have any money to give, or if you don't give. We had a hard time. We had a hard time with who resists and opposes and who benefits.
Because they
and
seem to be the same.
And time was running out also.
I know. Yes, this has to go very fast. I mean, each of these can be done over a much longer period of time, and you can get to different levels. We're just going to stop and look at these for a second right now. I chose these three, not exactly randomly, but they depicted different kinds of actions on Jesus' part. For instance, Jesus gets a little violent over here, mm-hmm. and right here he's preventing violence, and right here he's meeting some needs. So they're all different kinds of actions, and sometimes we have a hard time knowing that both there is a variety of action and how it relates to us. For instance, in this first one, we talked about the giving to the food and what it means to be a part of a system that was helping people to eat. And in the earlier session of the staff today, we spent the time just on this one. And other things came up, for instance, simplifying lifestyles, you know, as you go deeper beyond the actual action of giving food to somebody. Political lobbying was brought up because what happens if you try to create a system where maybe there isn't as much hunger, so you don't have to hand out as much food? Is that possible? And people say it is possible. Therefore, it's maybe a worthy action in our context today to feed as Jesus fed, to find the ways in our system to do that. So I think as we work with these, you start getting into to more and more of our own context and what we can do. And you also increase your list down here. For instance, who resists and opposes. I was in California, I was on the Synod's, on the board for the Office of Governmental Ministry. And World Hunger monies went to that particular board. And especially in our church council, there's one person who had a lifelong fight against the money from World Hunger going to an Office of Governmental Ministry, advocating for food programs or legislation, because he said that is not the purpose of feeding. And so, and this debate goes on in our churches. There are people who resist that form of following Jesus' action. So I think as we go through each of these, we would find that it gets deeper. I'd love to explore this one here a little bit too more, the question of outcasts and different. Where does judgment come in? And where did Jesus use judgment? Where does it say that Jesus judged in any of his actions? You know, and where does that come in for us? Why has it become suddenly one of the first categories for us when we talk about our actions, that some are worthy of these actions and some aren't? And where did Jesus distinguish those things? And we find that he had resistance a lot of times because he didn't distinguish between those things. In fact, he seemed almost purposely chose the ones that were most unacceptable to the church establishment and got that kind of resistance. The question of Jesus in the temple to clean up the stewardship system. The whole question of priorities of money would come under there also. And as we talk about our church system, sometimes our church looks like a little corporation, acts like it, and is structured like it. And we need to look at that. Is that the best structure for a church to be in this way? And what is most in keeping with what Jesus wants us to be doing in that kind of ministry? I felt good to see that we find ourselves so often in the resistance level. Resistors are not always out there, but they're often deep inside and we don't identify them, let alone be able to deal with them. And that's the beginning place for us perhaps to work through some of these. But there's just a lot there, and each of you I know has more to bring to that, and it would be really interesting to go through all that, but we're not going to have time. Do you have any response to this as a process? As a method of Bible study.
Wonderful.
Is that helpful for you? And we read the same stories over and over, but sometimes a new focus brings them to life again. Yes, go ahead.
I would just, I guess, throw out one caution that occurred to me is it's nice to look at what Jesus did. That's very important. But you cannot really understand what he did without relating to what he said.
Mm-hmm.
The two go together,
mm-hmm.
The word and the action in Christ.
Yeah, that was the same disclaimer I gave at the beginning. This is not, you know, if you do it this way, you'll understand everything. We need many ways to put the whole picture together. And this is one we've tended to ignore a little bit in a lot of ways. I would just like to also point you to a couple of other other resources. In Nicaragua, there is an island called Soletiname, where a priest named Ernesto Cardenal for many, many years led the campesinos in this kind of a Bible study, where each of them brought to life the gospel for their own lives. And these are recorded in dialogues that are printed. You can find them, I think, in the bookstore. And also they have one that's a very nice gift edition where they have shorter dialogues printed up on a number of different lessons throughout the life of Christ from different passages, along with artwork from Nicaragua. So you can see Jesus being born in a Nicaraguan forest, tropical forest, and you can see who the resistors are in that day. And just one other thing that for us, I find this is helpful for me, is that for the people in the third world, it is often much easier to understand the kind of social structure that happened, that existed in Jesus' day, and what interaction that had. They know resistance because they've had resistance, and no longer is what we're doing, is it right because people are letting us do it and praising us, or is what we're doing right in spite of all the resistance and the oppression we have because Jesus calls us to do this. And so I think for people in that kind of a situation, this is very important because it gives them the courage, it gives them the inspiration to follow in that path in spite of resistance that is sometimes just incredibly massive and hard for us to even comprehend. So in that sense, I think it's something that is very much a part of their culture. I picked up in this last Peace March I was at the Bible study. This is how they present some of their Bible study material, sort of newspaper cartoon form. And there's some wonderful things in here that they're a little small and you can't really share them. But there's a picture in here, a diagram, for example. It has a whole bunch of people. You can see they're kind of squished. They're short. They're crunched down because they're all holding up a platform. And on top of the platform are standing the religious leaders of Jesus' day. And they're holding up a platform. And on top of that are standing the Roman imperialists of their day, who are on the top of the... And people understand that because they've been down here. And for them, this whole structure is part of their own life. And they know what it means to share in that context. And so it's an attempt for them to understand the gospel is a living thing for their day. And it's a very up-to-date, not an old story.